Happy St. George's Day to you, by the way. How are you? Good morning. It's Sunday, April 23rd, 2017. It is St. George's Day. If you're doing something to celebrate it today, I wish you well. Weather is beautiful. It is here in the northwest of the UK anyway. I could tell you a story or two about St. George's Day, but I won't. I won't waste too much time. This is your Sunday View, broadcasting live on davidicke.com. Fab Radio 2 in Manchester, TuneIn Radio, richieallen.co.uk. Lots to talk about. We will be reviewing, or I will be anyway, the newspapers today, the Sunday papers. If you want to participate, simply tweet me. It's at Richie Allen Show on Twitter, richie@richieallen.co.uk.
For critical information ignored by the mainstream media, log on to davidicke.com/headlines now.
Broadcasting live from the great city of Manchester, England. This is the Richie Allen Show on davidicke.com.
Sure is. Good to be with you, as always. I say that a lot. It's good to be with you. Good to be with you. It's good to be with you. Good to be alive this Sunday. Looking forward to your tweets. Lots going on. A lot happening over the weekend. Big day today here in the UK, St. George's Day. And you know as well as I do, there has been, for many years, an anti-nationalist agenda to paint, not to paint, but to, well, to diminish days of national sovereignty, of celebration of nationalism, and I don't know. Maybe I should leave that there. I might get myself into trouble. But there's been an agenda for a long time to, and you'll see it today in some of the regional news broadcasts around the UK. There might be some footage of parades in places around the country, Yorkshire, Nottingham, elsewhere, and watch the way it's covered by the news organisations. Listen to the, observe the tone of it. I said I wouldn't get into this, so I'm not going to get into it today. But anyway, happy St. George's Day. What I was getting at, it won't receive very favourable coverage on the national media today. It won't, right? Anyway, good stuff. There's an election taking place in France. Very little I can tell you about that, other than several media, alternative media commentators are alleging that Facebook is taking down pages that were launched or started in support of Marine Le Pen. I have no idea how true any of that is, and you know, dear listener, you and I have been friends some time now. It doesn't matter a damn. Anyway, so the French election today, we'll be covering the fallout from the first round of voting tomorrow on Monday's Richie Allen Show. Letting you know what's happening. The London Marathon takes place today as well. What's the relationship between the marathon and the French election? Security. Security. There are men and women with guns everywhere. Guns are so ugly to me. I'm not going to go down that road either. Not today. No, no, no. I've got lots to get through. I try to keep this to around about 40 to 45 minutes. It ends up going on and on and on. So I'm not going to go down that road. But yeah, huge security in France. More army personnel on the streets than ever before. The hyper-militarized police as well. You wouldn't imagine. It's a European, democratic country, free country, if you were to observe it today. So, and of course, huge security around the London Marathon, lest the dastardly ISIS decide to do something there. By the way, if you're running in the marathon today, all the best with that. I have great admiration for the men and women who get themselves into shape to run the marathon. Most of them, of course, doing it for charity, not for any sporting achievement. I have great admiration for people who do that. So good luck today. Friend of mine, Pat Grant from Waterford City, top man. Not sure if Pat is running in London today. Pat wouldn't be a regular listener to this type of programme, but he's a good lad and he's a very, very accomplished marathon runner. So good luck to Pat. Right. Shall we just get on with it then? You see, I'm going to reiterate, by the way, happy St. George's Day. So this is Sunday View. It's where I look at the newspapers and the front pages and also take a look at the big stories of the day as well. Before we do that, a very interesting report on RT today. Now, you will know if you are a news consumer, if you are a news hound, that the President of the European Parliament, Antonio Tajani, met with Theresa May on Friday. So he was with Theresa May on Friday. Now, after the meeting, he said, if the UK wanted to stay in the European Union after the election, if it wanted to stay in after the election, that would be good for everybody. Everybody in Europe would be in favour of that, said Antonio Tajani. Why is it interesting? Well, I think we're going to see a lot of EU interference in the election, in the campaigning, in the cycle leading up to the 8th of June. A lot of heavyweights from Brussels are going to make similar comments in the coming weeks, I think, in a very unsubtle attempt to influence the election. Now, here's RT with this report.
The President of the European Parliament says the Brexit process could be easily reversed if there was a new government in the UK after the snap election on the 8th of June.
If the UK, after the election, wants to withdraw Article 50, then the procedure is very clear. If the UK wanted to stay, everybody would be in favour. I would be very happy.
He said that even though Article 50, that's this formal notice of Britain's intention to leave the EU, has already been triggered, so the letter was sent from London to Brussels last month, it can still be revoked. And especially if the UK votes in a new government that is against Brexit at this upcoming snap general election in June. Moreover, Tajani has said that everyone in the EU would be incredibly pleased if this turned out to be the case and if the UK wanted, in fact, to stay. And in doing this, the European Union appears to be hinting that the British people who aren't fans of Brexit need to be voting against Theresa May's Conservative Party in the upcoming elections. So as this general election here in the UK draws nearer, we could see this message of vote Theresa May out if you want to stay in the EU getting louder.
You're going to see a lot of it. Now, Jeremy Corbyn, the Labour leader, spoke on the Andrew Marr show a short time ago. I recorded it just for you, and we'll hear some of it shortly. Paul Nuttall as well. The reason I tell you that, UKIP leader, of course, the reason I tell you that is because we're going straight to the papers, and the papers are full of the polls. Polls, right? The first round of serious polls are out and they are published in the paper, and it doesn't make good reading if you are a Labour supporter or indeed a Labour candidate. The Sunday Express, the headline on the front page is 1 in 7 Labour voters turns Tory. 1 in 7 Labour voters turns Tory. The supporting text says party leadership was the main reason for defection, as the survey put Theresa May 16 points ahead of Labour on 42%, giving the Conservatives a thumping majority of more than 100. This is the Express now. 26% of those questioned by Norstat, the polling company employed by the Express, 26% said they would vote Labour, 10% opted for the Lib Dems. Now, this survey asked 100... No, it didn't. It asked 1,036 people how they voted in May last year. Right? How did you vote in May 2015? And which party they intended to support in 7 weeks' time. That's where they got that information from. Okay. More than a third of those surveys said they were abandoning Labour because of party leadership. A quarter citing Brexit and leadership, and 16% said it was Brexit alone. That's the Sunday Express. Doesn't get any better in the Sunday Times. They also ran a poll, did the Times, which says round about the same number, 47% for May, giving her a much bigger majority in June. That's the Sunday Times. The Sunday Times runs with the headline, May parks her battle tanks on Labour's lawn. What it's saying, the Times, is that Theresa May plans to woo voters using promises like cutting £100 from energy bills. And as I said, the Sunday Times poll suggests the Tories' lead is 47% to 26%, I think. Energy bills are traditionally issues of Labour. The Sunday Times are saying that the Tories are stealing Labour's best lines to keep control of the political centre. whatever that is, the political centre ground. There's another story on the front of the Sunday Times, by the way, which says Corbyn's office ruled by chaos. So Sunday Times is owned by Rupert Murdoch, of course, and News Corp. Corbyn's office ruled by chaos. Obviously, the Sunday Times editorial policy will be to support the Conservative Party. Now, some American newspapers are running with a story today suggesting that Donald Trump regularly speaks with Rupert Murdoch. In fact, several times a week, Murdoch has the ear of the US president. So bear that in mind when you're reading the Sunday Times, and its article says that Corbyn is basically in the middle of a chaotic Labour Party. His office is in chaos. It's all crazy there. Now, the Sunday Mirror. Poll shocks Jez. Jez socks Rich, screams the headline. That's the headline. Poll shocks Jez. Jez socks Rich. Now, the Sunday Mirror claims the Tories enjoy 50% of the pre-election support, their highest since 1991, says the Sunday Mirror. The Sunday Mirror says Corbyn would slash the pay of the wealthiest bosses in the country if he was to win the election. They've also been calling Have Labour today for more bank holidays. Nothing wrong with that. I might revisit my 15-year... What is it? It is 15-year... polling booth abstinence. I've not voted in a general election since 2002. I might revisit that because Jez is calling for more bank holidays. He wants to make the 23rd of April today a national bank holiday, St. George's Day, meaning that we'd have tomorrow off. He wants to make St. Patrick's Day a holiday here, as well as St. David's Day and St. Andrew's Day as well, as far as I know. So there you go. Sunday Mirror saying that 45% of Labour's voters say they cannot win the election with Corbyn at the helm. He's even losing the young people, says the Sunday Mirror. 41% of 18 to 24-year-olds say that Labour cannot win with Corbyn at the helm. That's the Sunday Mirror. All doom and gloom for Labour voters. Maybe they might start listening to this show and come to understand that it wouldn't matter anyway whomever was in power. Now, as I mentioned a few minutes ago, Corbyn was on the BBC Andrew Marr show a little earlier. I'll play some of that for you shortly. It is very interesting because Marr chose to focus predominantly on defence. So I want you to hear some of that. We'll do that in a minute. There is some relief, though, for Jeremy Corbyn in the Sunday Mail. Who knows what to believe? The Sunday Mail's headline is Tory lead slashed in half after tax U-turn. And the text says May's hopes of winning a landslide election victory suffered a major blow last night after her poll lead plummeted to 11% amid the row over her tax and pension plans. A Servation poll for the Mail on Sunday put the Tories on 40%, Labour on 29%, the Lib Dems and UKIP level on 11% each. Now, the Sunday Mail take great pains, or go to great pains, to point out that their poll is the only poll published today after the news that the Tories were going to do a U-turn on taxation. So they're saying the other polls, which say that the Tories have this massive lead, those polls were done before the news on taxes. So Corbyn and his supporters might derive some, I don't know, some optimism from the Servation poll. Okay? May said she wouldn't abandon the party's promise to spend 0.7% of national income on overseas aid. Well, they've basically said overnight that plans to drop existing pledges not to increase tax and to guarantee a minimum 2.5% annual rise in pensions, they're going to get rid of those. The Tories have said we won't increase tax and we'll guarantee a minimum 2.5% rise in pensions. Those promises are going out the window. And the Sunday Mail are saying we did our poll after that news came out. It's complicated, isn't it, sometimes? No, it is on a Sunday morning. It is on a Sunday morning. Some hope for Labour supporters there. Sky News political reporter Daniel McCaffrey Here's McCaffrey trying to make some sense of these polls. This is him on Sky News short time ago.
Ultimately telling us, Isabel, is that the Conservatives are way, way, way out in front. Now, as you say, we have to take many of these polls, with a pinch of salt these days. But, you know, there is a Comrades poll for the Sunday Mirror today. They find that 50% of people are likely to back the Conservatives at the next election. Only 25% backing Labour. I think it's the first time since 1991 the Comrades has recorded any poll party at 50% in the polls, and it's backed up by an Optimum poll for The Observer that found that 45% backed the Conservatives, Labour on 26%. As I say, you know, we should take it with a pinch of salt, but when the lead is so big, I'm not entirely sure the polls can be that wrong, and it does seem that Jeremy Corbyn, at least at the start of this election campaign, has somewhat of a mountain to climb.
Yeah, but again, the news that the Tories are going to drop commitments to not raise taxes might give some hope to Corbyn. The Sunday Telegraph front page headline, writ large. The headline is, Corbyn puts UK at terror risk. Corbyn puts UK at terror risk. In fact, if you're a Labour supporter and if you're a fan of Corbyn's, don't read the papers today. They're a bit like Stephen King books. Horror stories in the papers. If you believe them, don't believe them. Corbyn puts UK at terror risk. The text says that Britain wouldn't be safe under Corbyn because he can't take difficult decisions needed in the event of a terrorist attack. Now, we'll be revisiting this in a few minutes' time. Who said this today? Sir Patrick McLaughlin claims that it's blindingly obvious that voters would be better protected under Theresa May. You'll be safer under May, says McLaughlin in the Sunday Telegraph. He questions Jeremy Corbyn's judgment in matters of war, saying he's not suitable to take on the responsibilities of being Prime Minister. He's got no gumption, got no backbone, got no guts. He wouldn't stand up to ISIS, he wouldn't stand up to anybody, says Sir Patrick McLaughlin. That's one story in the Sunday Telegraph. They also have a poll. Everybody has a poll. I'm going to give you my poll. The Richie Allen Show has conducted a poll. It's of two people, Richie Allen and the future Mrs. Allen. It's all a load of bollocks, is what we say. The Sunday Observer. Lib Dems won't do coalition deals. Farren pledged to voters. Lib Dem leader Tim Farren wants his party to become the main opposition party. Ergo, they are saying they will not do a deal with anybody to get into government. That's according to the Lib Dems. Right? Shall we have a quick break? Gonna have a quick break at 17 and a half minutes past 11. This is your Richie Allen Show, broadcasting live on davidicke.com, Fab Radio 2, alternate, not today, TuneIn Radio and richieallen.co.uk. Tweet me, it's at Richie Allen Show on Twitter. When we come back, political correctness, racism, it's going to drive you mad. It's my job on Sundays to drive you mad.
There's a place high in the mountains of Spain, a sanctuary where souls gather from all around the globe to learn about themselves and experience powerful changes in the way we see our world. They become awakened to their gifts and their power to heal others. Become part of this ever-growing worldwide family of unique, pure energy healing practitioners. Discover how amazing you truly are. Go to www.markbayerski.com. It could just change your life forever.
Virtually every transaction that involves a child is valuable to somebody.
We intend to show everyone the real reason children are being removed at an alarming rate.
No, this is awful.
The baby's not being seen by the doctor or nothing.
They are psychopathic.
They have got the legal right to kill children now, because that's what they're doing.
Traffic 2, available now at premillonpictures.co.uk.
Have you lost access to important data from a computer hard drive, mobile phone, or other storage device? Maybe you have a broken hard drive containing years of information, or a smartphone that no longer works from which you'd like the pictures, movies, and chats recovered. If you would like to recover data from any type of digital device, including desktop and laptop computers, external hard drives, cameras, smartphones, NAS, and RAID servers, then contact Data Clinic today at dataclinic.co.uk now.
broadcasting the information the mainstream media won't touch. This is The Richie Allen Show, in association with DavidIke.com.
Yes, feathers are us on Twitter. You can add us to your poll, Richie. Yeah, very scientific poll, that. Caroline, what do you think? It is a load of bollocks. Fantastic, so do I. There you are. That's 100%. Hi to Val on Twitter. Kate tweets, it's all just a puppet show. We should be looking at who is controlling the puppets. We spend 98.72% of the time on this programme talking about how it is ultimately a load of bollocks. Karen in Glasgow, seriously dropping whopping great bombs on Syria, etc., puts the UK at risk. Jesus, tweets Karen. Hi to Dean Smith, who's listening. And I understand Dean's sister is a Trina, Dean. I saw that tweet a bit earlier on. Is listening in Tenerife. Trina, how are you? Lucky you to be in Tenerife, by the way. Hi to Liz Jones, to Queenie, to Hubertes, to Gail, to Tiger as well. Everybody else who's tuned in this fair old Sunday morning. We are going to come back to Corbyn. He was on with Andrew Marr. Questions were put to him about the security of the country under his leadership. It was a fascinating exchange. I'll bring that to you very, very shortly. I'm not working on it now. I had it all done before 11 a.m. I just want to space it out. I don't want to bore you to death too much with that sort of thing. I want to kind of vary it up a bit. Now, all the papers today are carrying this story, which we've gotten into, again, recently anyway, quite a lot. Wait for it. Oxford University has suggested that avoiding making eye contact with somebody or asking where they are originally from is racist. It is a form of racist microaggression. If you don't make eye contact with somebody, or if you ask them where they originally come from, you are a microaggressive racist bastard. According to Oxford University, the institution's Equality and Diversity Unit says these are two common behaviours and it could potentially cause the listener mental ill health. So next time you are speaking to somebody from a different ethnic background and you don't stare them in the eye for the duration of the conversation, you are a heartless racist motherfucker. That's what you are, according to Oxford. You're not supposed to swear on Sunday mornings, Rich. That's Oxford University. And if you ask them where they originally come from, well, that's just not acceptable. Not acceptable, that. I'll come back to that one in a minute because I do that all the time. And I'll tell you where and I'll tell you how it comes up in a minute. The Trinity Term newsletter says asking someone where they are originally from implies that you, the questioner, doesn't believe they are British. It also mentions not speaking directly to people and jokes drawing attention to someone's difference as forms of everyday racism. Racism. Isn't it madness? Isn't it madness, dear listener? And just in case you think I'm making it up, you heard it right. Oxford University now wants to convince you and me that you can determine that someone is racist by the way they look. And that whatever you might think you are communicating to somebody with your facial expression, if they think you're racist, well, you're fucking racist. It's as simple as that. Why am I laughing? Because it's not funny. It's terrifying because think about it for a minute. We don't do fear porn on this programme. We don't do that melodrama, that exaggeration. But think about this. How long before microaggression is legislated for? How long before it becomes a crime? He asked me where my family came from. He's a racist. They come from Waterford. You racist bastard. How dare you? I was thinking today, whenever I get into a taxi, invariably, the taxi driver, the man or woman, is they're usually Asian or African in the part of the city I live in. And I'm a chatterbox. I like to chat to people. I like to get their opinions on stuff. And I file them away in my memory. And I often ask the driver, you know, where do you come from? Where does your family come from? And we often then chat about that particular country. And I'm always amazed at how clued in the taxi drivers are about current events. And not just from a mainstream point of view, but from an alternative point of view. We talk about their country, we talk about America, we talk about Western intervention and stuff like that. This is true. So what goes on in your part of the world, the part of the world you originate from? Do you stay in touch with your country? Do you visit? Pleasant, interesting conversations. I couldn't imagine for a minute that the driver felt threatened, as big and as ugly and as bald as I am, with my big ugly head and my shaven head. I couldn't imagine the driver thinking, Jesus, I'm in trouble here. Paddy's asking me, where do I come from? Or what is my heritage? And this is one in a long line of this nonsense that people, I suppose, regular people, will look at that and they will dismiss that as just being a bit silly and a bit harmless. But it isn't a bit silly and it isn't harmless. It's a lot silly and it's very harmful. You might remember last year, Oxford law students in, you know, people that will eventually be barristers, people who will eventually be judges, were told they could skip lectures, lectures that covered violent cases, if they feared the content would be too distressing. These trigger warnings. Academics at Oxford are offered counselling so that they can be so that they can avoid being traumatised by their own research. Madness. The University of Glasgow this year said it issues trigger warnings for theology students studying the crucifixion of Jesus. Imagine that. You're a theology student. We're going to talk about the crucifixion now. You might want to leave the room. Holy shit. Don't let them watch The Last Temptation of Christ, whatever you do. Is it The Last Temptation of Christ? No, no, what's the other one Gibson made? It's like torture porn. Gibson made one, didn't he? And I think Jim Caviezel is in it playing Jesus. And I think Aramaic is spoken. And it's torture porn. Don't let them watch that. They'll never recover. That's in Glasgow. Wait for it. Veterinary students in Glasgow who work with dead animals. Can get counselling as well. You want to be a vet and you're finding it difficult to cut open a dead animal. Don't think you're going to work out very well when Fido or Tiggles the cat are on your operating table. Holy God. Archaeology students at the University College in London were given permission to walk out of classes if they found them disturbing. Ah, laugh, because if you don't laugh, you'll go mad. Students of forensic science at Strathclyde University in Glasgow are given a verbal warning at the beginning of some lectures that sensitive images involving blood patterns, crime scenes and bodies will be part of the presentation. Why are you studying forensic science then, you cretin? You muppet. Back to where it all began, the way you look when you're talking to somebody and asking them where they are from. Microaggressive racism, says Oxford. It must be stopped. Must be stopped. And what they're trying to do, and we've gotten into this with Frank Ferrady, University of Kent. If you missed that interview, it's on our YouTube channel. Simon manages it, top man. Go to youtube.com, put Richie Allen Frank Ferrady in. He's a top professor of sociology at Kent University. And he said exactly what we've been saying for a long time. This is Orwellian. This is the Ministry of Information. This is about reprogramming people to think the way the system wants you to think and shut debate down at its source. Stop it. No debate. Insane. Insane. 29 minutes past the hour. Imagine that. Somebody can now say you're racist because of the expression on your face when you were talking to them, or that you didn't look them in the eye, or that, God forbid, you said, Faisal, where does your family come from? You fucking racist. Moving on. UKIP and the burqa. It's in all the papers today. UKIP and the burqa. Apparently, UKIP have done an about turn on something they said ahead of the 2015 general election, and that a ban on the full face veil worn by some Muslim women will be included in UKIP's manifesto, the manifesto, which will be launched tomorrow. Paul Nuttall saying the burqa and the niqab in public is a barrier to social harmony as well as a security risk. The UKIP have changed their tune about this a couple of times. Back in 2010, the former UKIP leader Nigel Farage proposed a ban on the burqa, but in 2015 they dropped it from their manifesto, saying that they were a libertarian party. Now, this morning, Paul Nuttall was on the Andrew Marr show, and on the about turn on the burqa, this is what Nuttall had to say.
For two reasons. Firstly, obviously we have a heightened security risk at the moment, and for CCTV to be effective, you need to see people's faces, because whether we like it or not, in this country, there's more CCTV per head than anywhere else on the planet, with the most watched people. And for that to be effective, you need to see people's faces. Secondly, there's the issue of integration. I don't believe that you can integrate fully and enjoy the fruits of British society if you can't see people's faces. And you know, look at some of the statistics. 58% of Muslim women are economically inactive. 22% don't speak English to any great level. What we need to do is we need to ensure that these people are fully integrated into British society, and you can't do that if you're hidden behind a veil.
How does this actually work? Because presumably you don't ban dress codes inside people's houses. So it's, yes. If they step onto the street, what happens then? They'd be arrested?
No. What happens in France, for example, is there's a fine. And what we're doing is we'll come in line with other European countries, such as Belgium, Bulgaria. There's a ban, for example, in the city of Barcelona, some places in Italy. And indeed, Angela Merkel's talking about this in Germany at the moment. And interestingly, Manfred Weber, who's the leader of the biggest group in the European Parliament, is now talking about an EU-wide ban. We can either be on the curve with this or behind the curve. I'd rather...
You could be a good Europhile as usual.
So Marr did ask Nuttall why the change of heart. I won't play you that because I don't have too much time. But Nuttall said that things have changed since 2015. Security issues dictate that it's probably better that, you know, in public, and particularly in public buildings, and when you are at an office, when you're conducting a transaction, whatever it is, it's better maybe not to have the burqa. That's what Nuttall said. What about Sharia law and Sharia courts in the UK?
You're also going for Sharia law and Sharia courts. Again, why?
Because I don't believe that we should have a parallel legal system in this country.
Are you doing the same thing for Jewish courts?
Well, Bet-Din is slightly different. We've had Bet-Din courts in this country, which date all the way back... They go all the way back to the days of Cromwell. The Jewish population in Britain, Orthodox Jewish population, is falling to about 250,000 now. The issue surrounding Sharia is that the Muslim population is doubling decade on decade. It's 3 million now. It'll be 6 million soon. And, you know... Trevor Phillips's report showed that a quarter of Muslim people in Britain want to see Sharia replace British law in areas which are predominantly Muslim populated.
Now, Paul Nuttall there on the Andrew Marr show today. I'm going to, because I sometimes get accused of not ducking but not talking about this issue too much, this idea that Sharia courts are more predominant, that they are more... plentiful, that they're out there basically, that there's more of it going on than people like me are prepared to admit. Now, I've certainly never ducked any issue. It's not an issue that I've not talked about on programmes like this before. I have. So we're going to have a look at that on the programme in the coming week, maybe the week after, this idea that there are a lot of Sharia courts operating in this country outside of UK law. I am very interested in it. And we will talk about that more. I promise you that. Now, the media view of Nuttall and the burqa manifesto pledge is that UKIP is finished and that it's desperately trying to remain relevant somehow in 2017. Jack Blanchard is the political editor of the Sunday Mirror.
Yeah, total desperation. UKIP are a dying party. What's happened to them since the EU referendum is that they have plummeted in the polls. They've failed miserably at by-elections. They're seeing all of those old Tory voters who were voting UKIP are all going back to the Tories because Theresa May is doing everything that they liked about UKIP, which is taking us out of Europe and bringing back grammar schools. Therefore, there is no point to UKIP anymore. anymore, and now they are desperately trying to grab some headlines because they know they are facing a drubbing on GEA.
Well, you see, I don't necessarily agree with that at all. I think it's rather opportunistic of UKIP to talk about the Burka now. There's no doubt about that. But the idea that they're finished and that they're irrelevant, wait and see what happens in June. UKIP got 5 million votes last time around. And if the UK had proportional representation as opposed to first past the post, UKIP would have been very well represented in Westminster, or at Westminster. But I think, you see, I don't want to spend too much time on this because I spoke a lot about it during the week, last week. The powers that be, the people who really control both sides of every argument, who control all the political parties. What's going on with this election? These people want the United Kingdom to remain in the European Union no matter what. So, watch it closely. You know, it could turn out that Theresa May... Two things might happen. The Conservatives might win the election again, but with no increased majority or maybe slightly less of a majority. Maybe they don't get a majority, the Tories, but they get maybe 5 or 6 seats short of a majority, but they're the main party. So maybe the Tories have to form a coalition after the next election. Maybe Tim Farron turns out to be what Lib Dems have been for years, pathological liars. Maybe the Lib Dems will do a deal with the Tories. And that throws the whole Leave the European Union up in the air again, and it promotes the possibility of a second referendum. Now, under that scenario, UKIP would be very relevant going forward. So we'll have to wait and see what happens. On the Burka, what do I think? I've always said this. I don't like the idea of anybody in authority telling anybody else what they should and shouldn't wear. Because where does that end, right? But I'm like, I suppose, a lot of white Western men in that I don't like the burqa. I don't like it. And if I was dealing, because I'm obviously a-religious, I'm an atheist, religion is nonsense. In my world, in my tiny little existence, in my opinion, I've no time for organised religion. I don't like the burqa. And if I was dealing with the public, I'd probably be irritated at speaking to a woman who I can't really see. Not because of any nefarious reasons, because I want to ogle women. Not because of those reasons, but because it just doesn't feel right. But whether any government should legislate for it, I don't know. Now, to Jeremy Corbyn, 23 minutes to the top of the hour. The Labour leader was on the Andrew Marr show a bit earlier on. This is serious stuff. Serious, not so much because of Corbyn and what he says and what he doesn't say, but because of the behaviour of the media and the presenter, Andrew Marr. Behaviour in terms of what he says. And then I suppose you can probably talk about what Corbyn doesn't say. So Jeremy Corbyn, big interview, first major interview of this election cycle. He's on with Andrew Marr. The very first question he's asked is about defence.
In that spirit, I want to cover a lot of things. Sure. I'm going to cover domestic policy. I'm going to start off with foreign policy. Because one thing we know is that if you win the election and you walk through the doors of Downing Street, almost the first thing that happens is that you are tapped on the shoulder by a senior civil servant who takes you off to a room to write 4 letters to the captains of Britain's nuclear submarines, telling them, instructing them, what to do if this country is attacked in a nuclear strike. So what will you be telling them?
What I'll be saying is that I want us to achieve a nuclear-free world. What I want us to do is adhere to the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty and take part in negotiations surrounding that. And crucially...
And this goes in the letter to the commanders.
No. Crucially, immediately promote the 6-party talks on the Korean Peninsula as a way of de-escalating nuclear tensions around the world.
Because at that point, you have to say something to the commanders. You have to say, fire or don't fire. And you can't, you know, you can't dodge it. You have to give them, in those letters, a strict instruction.
A strict instruction to follow orders when given.
So you don't tell them to fire or not to fire. They don't know what to do.
Listen, the issue has to be, we want a secure and peaceful world. We achieve that by promoting peace, by also promoting security, and security comes from that process.
But as Prime Minister, you have very, very fast decisions to take on all of this. Can I ask you directly, are there any circumstances in which you would authorise a nuclear strike? Any circumstances?
Look, I've made clear my views on nuclear weapons. I've made clear that there would be no first use of it. I've made clear that any use of nuclear weapons is a disaster for the whole world. I think we should look at the process by which we achieve peace and security, because actually nuclear weapons are not the solution to the world's security issues. They're the disaster of the world's security issues if ever used. And that's why I would focus first on the issues of Korea, because I think that is where the greatest tensions are at the present time. But also, I'm very disturbed that the Trump administration is trying to unpick President Obama's deal with Iran, which was a huge step forward to bring Iran in from the cold and start to address issues of security there as well.
Now, Corbyn making the point there that the US, through its unsubtle threats to dismantle the Iran deal, that the US are responsible for much of the tension. It's a good point. He makes a good point about nuclear weapons as well, does Corbyn. But Andrew Marr wants to press home the fact that under Corbyn, we'd be vulnerable, that Corbyn isn't strong enough to make the big decisions when they arrive, or when they arise.
The Conservative chairman has been disobliging about you in the papers, as you would expect this morning, but Mr. Rasmussen, the former Secretary General of NATO, perhaps more significantly, has said that you would be a threat to the future of NATO because you don't really believe in NATO and Western security would be harmed by Jeremy Corbyn becoming Prime Minister.
I look forward to talking to Mr. Rasmussen because there are principles around NATO which actually come from the 1942 Atlantic Treaty between Britain and the United States. That's where NATO came from. NATO is obviously a very big force in Europe, and indeed it's given to itself powers around the world. I would want to work with NATO leaders in building up an effective, sensible relationship with non-NATO countries such as Russia, but also try to de-escalate tensions around the world, because we have President Trump, who seems to be going very much in the opposite direction.
Your enthusiasm for getting around the table with people and talking to people is well known. What I suppose I'm trying to get at, that it's as Prime Minister, you have concrete, tough, immediate decisions to take, including, for instance, we've got 800 troops have just been sent to Estonia because of worries about the Russians on the border. You were against that deployment. As Prime Minister, would you bring them back?
Listen, we'd keep those troops there for the moment, but we would use the opportunity of a newly elected government to say, look, we want to reduce tensions want to reduce tensions on the borders of Europe. We want to build a relationship with the US administration as well as with the Russian administration and with the other big powers around the world, because we have to have that relationship. And so my calls would be to the UN and all the members of the Security Council.
Right, talk and resolve these issues through diplomacy, says Corbyn. Meet the Russians, de-escalate tensions, talk to Trump. Marr then asks Corbyn, would he stop airstrikes on Syria were he to be Prime Minister after June 8th?
When you speak to President Trump, will you be telling him that we will no longer be taking part in airstrikes in Syria and Iraq?
I will tell him that I want to see a process that brings about the end to the conflicts in both those countries. And at the end of the day...
Sorry, do you suspect those strikes or not?
Let me just finish. At the end of the day, the only solution in Syria is going to be a political one. There's no other way of getting it. There has to be a reconvening quickly of the Geneva process, Geneva conference. I would say to President Trump, listen, it's in nobody's interest for this war to continue. Let's get the Geneva process going quickly. And in the meantime, no more strikes. Have the UN, the UN investigation into the war crime of the use of chemical weapons in Syria, and take it on from there. And let's involve the UN in this.
I'm sorry to press
you. You seem to be
this,
proposing everything on a sort of fairly unilateral basis.
Well, I'm just asking you, because the power would be in your hands as Prime Minister to suspend those airstrikes when you walk into Number 10, or not to let them keep going. And the question is very clear, which do you do? And you suggest you suspend them.
I want us to say, listen, let's get the people around the table quickly. And a way of achieving that, suspend the strikes, possibly. That's one way.
The point
has to be bringing about a political solution. All wars end with a political solution. Let's go to that place as quickly as we can.
Now, this is really important, and this goes to the heart of what I've been doing on this programme with many terrific men and women guests over the last 2.5 years on this particular programme. When I say what I've been doing, don't misunderstand me. I don't do anything. When I say what I've been doing, it's trying to explain this to people who are mired in the political system, who are mired in the belief that they can change things at the ballot box. They cannot. Use the UN to properly investigate the chemical attacks, said Corbyn. Stop the bombing. Fair enough. Who could argue with that? Good. All right. Fair enough. Ma on buckle, as we say in the old country. But why isn't Jeremy Corbyn challenging Andrew Marr firmly? Why isn't his body language different? Why is he sitting back in the chair and mumbling, trying to appear all calm, speaking under his breath, swallowing his words? Why isn't Jeremy Corbyn sitting up and asking Andrew Marr, saying the types of things that Corbyn would have said traditionally as a backbencher? But Andrew, you understand, don't you, that the situation in Syria was created by the United States and her allies arming so-called moderate rebels to attack the Syrian government and the Syrian army. And that's caused absolute chaos. Not to mention, Andrew, that, you know, we understand now many former Joint Chiefs, many former generals have come out to say that none of these guys were moderates. These guys were Saudi Wahhabis. Why isn't Corbyn saying... Now, I know why Corbyn is not saying that. But this is the critical thinking thing which really, really, really gets to me. People don't ask the questions. Why isn't Corbyn going after these people? Would you stop the bombing? Would you stop the bombing? Turning it back on the aggressive, passive-aggressive, let's be honest, passive-aggressive Andrew Marr. What do you mean, Andrew? Why should we be pounding Syria and destroying cities and areas, allegedly going after Islamic State, when we know for a fact that the intelligence agencies of the United States, the UK and Israel were responsible for that, what's going on in that country now? So why don't we stop the bombing, Andrew? Why don't we make an international statement that it's completely wrong? Do whatever we can to help the legitimate Syrian government get rid of the lunatic terrorists that are in Syria, and then later on we can talk about what's going on in Syria, what plans the President Assad and his government have for the future. Let's do that. But Corbyn doesn't say that. And I'm not an idealist and I'm not unrealistic. I'm not naive. Corbyn could say that. And this goes to the heart again of something we've said going back for 2 years now. His time in the spotlight is limited. You don't get too many opportunities with the national media pointing at you to tell the truth about what's going on. And skirting around the truths and throwing a couple of nuggets out and mumbling about it's not good enough. Not good enough. Why should we be bombing a sovereign country? Why should we be demanding the removal of a president who was voted in with an overwhelming majority 3 years ago by his own people? Who are we to say he should leave? Who are we to be arming people, calling them moderates? Who are we to be party to the bombing of Yemen back to the Stone Age? The murder of tens of thousands of people through the Saudi government and our arming of the Saudis, the worst abusers of human rights on planet Earth, followed closely by the Israelis. Who are we? Corbyn should be asking. What's wrong with you, man? You're supposed to be impartial, supposed to work for the BBC, you're supposed to be fair. Why are you advocating the bombing of a country that's never threatened the United Kingdom? Corbyn doesn't do that. Doesn't do that. Doesn't do anything. Now, Andrew Marr wants to know, in the final clip I want to play you, about drone strike executions. Is it good enough? If we found the leader of ISIS, should we just kill him? This is what Corbyn says.
You're sitting in number 10. The spooks walk in and they say, Prime Minister...
Well, you wouldn't call them spooks, really.
I just... Well, the gentlemen in suits walk in. They say, Prime Minister Corbyn, we've got good news for you. Al-Baghdadi, the leader of ISIS, we know where he is. We can take him out with a drone strike. Can we have your permission? What do you tell them?
What I would tell them is, give me the information you've got. Tell me how accurate that is. And tell me what you think can be achieved by this. But the point has...
But if they do know where he is, I'm asking about decisions you would have to take as Prime Minister.
Can I take you back to the whole point?
Yeah.
What is the objective here? Is the objective to start more strikes that may kill many innocent people, as has happened, or is the objective to get a political solution in Syria? My whole point would
be... It might be to kill the leader of ISIS.
My whole point would be, does this help to get a political solution in Syria? Approach it from that position.
All right. Do you think killing the leader of ISIS would be helpful for a political solution?
I think the leader of ISIS not being around would be helpful. I'm no supporter or defender in any way whatsoever of ISIS. I'm sure you would concede. But I would also argue that the bombing campaign has killed a large number of civilians, who many of whom were virtually prisoners of ISIS. So you've got to think about these things.
Innocent people are killed when these strikes take place. Again, fair enough. But again, a mealy-mouthed, impotent response from Corbyn. Are you advocating, Andrew, BBC presenter, that when we are told by some military jock that Mr. X or Mr. Y is a terrorist and is a clear and present danger to the UK from Iraq or from Syria, that we should just kill them? Extrajudicial murder. No trial, no jury, no nothing. We take the word of some guy with stripes on his shoulders. Here you go. This guy's the ISIS leader. Mr. Prime Minister, give us the okay. And we've got a drone. We've got a bird in the sky. We'll blow him to pieces. Is that what you're saying, Andrew? Are you asking me seriously to contemplate that? But he doesn't. He says the true... He makes the true statement that these strikes kill innocent people. He doesn't make it with any determination, with any vigour, with any real energy, does he? That's it. Speaking of the people responsible for the chemical attack in Syria, Corbyn at least said, to his credit, the UN should get in there. And the UN should investigate to find out who is really responsible, in fairness to Corbyn. It's been blamed on Assad, of course. You know this, with no proof whatsoever. Now, Assad was speaking with Sputnik Media on Friday, and he said, did the Syrian president, that the US are blocking UN investigators doing their job because the US are frightened that the false flag will be exposed if the investigators get in to have a look. This is the report.
Syria's President Bashar al-Assad says Western countries are blocking expert delegations from coming to the country to investigate the alleged chemical attack in Idlib province from earlier this month. He was speaking to the Sputnik news agency.
We formally sent a letter to the United Nations for them. We asked them in that letter to send a delegation in order to investigate what happened in Khan Sheikhoun. Of course, till that moment, they didn't send because the West and the United States blocked any delegation from coming. Because if they come, they will find that all their narrative about what happened in Khan Sheikhoun and then the attack on Shayarat airport was false flag, was a lie. That's why they didn't send.
That's right. That's exactly why they didn't send any delegation. Because when they get there, they'll find out that the evidence they were given by the white helmets, right, is just nonsense. So Assad is absolutely right. And again, although Corbyn made the point that we need an investigation in Syria, he again could have been a bit more forceful with that. You know? Corbyn could have said to Andrew Marr, for example, Andrew, you've been presenting for the BBC for many, many moons, haven't you, Andrew? See, that's what somebody who was totally committed to the truth would do. If Corbyn was totally committed to the truth, he would put Marr on the back foot. Yes, well, yes, Mr. Corbyn. I don't see how that's relevant. I'll tell you how it's relevant, Andrew Marr. You and your colleagues sold the war on Iraq based on the biggest pack of lies of all time, that Saddam Hussein had weapons of mass destruction that he was using on his own people. Didn't you, Andrew? Andrew, don't interrupt me. You've invited me on here and you're trying to justify the destruction of a country like Syria through your very popular Sunday morning breakfast show. So sit there and answer me this. Were you party, were you complicit in the broadcasting of material that convinced the British people that a mad dictator called Saddam Hussein was using weapons of mass destruction to kill his own people? Yes, you were, Andrew. What happened to the weapons of mass destruction? So the same neocon madmen and Rothschild Zionist whores are telling us that a bad man in Syria is killing his own people. And guys like you, Andrew, you swore in 2007, you signed up to a pledge, I think started by the Guardian newspaper, that you would never be caught like that again, you would hold authority to account. Isn't that right, Andrew? So what are you doing? I live in a fantasy world, you see. I'll be told that later on. Oh, you're a fantasy. I'm not a fantasist. There's no conspiracy theory there. There's no way that Corbyn could be accused of being a conspiracy theorist. And all those people that are moving away from Corbyn now, who supported him when he wasn't leader of the Labour Party, when he was standing against Liz Kendall and what's-her-face, Yvette Cooper and one or two others, when he was standing against these people, he was supported by people who believed that he would do what I parodied there. And he hasn't done it. No matter what opportunity he's been given to do it, he hasn't done it. And that is why you take the opinion polls with a massive pinch of salt. Of course, they can be manipulated, they can be fixed. But I would be prepared to accept that a lot of people who committed wholeheartedly to Jeremy Corbyn pre the Labour leadership election have now moved away. Undoubtedly. I can't believe, Andrew Marr, you're interviewing me, the leader of the Labour Party. You're asking me to make a decision about bombing a country based on chemical weapons claims. I can't believe it, Andrew. I'm almost tempted to laugh, but I can't laugh because we're talking about real lives, people being blown to pieces by our actions. It's not that difficult, you see. It's not that difficult. 4 minutes to the top of the hour. And on that, finally on that, you might remember Peter Ford. I mean, what a mad week it's been. The French attacker shooting the police officer, leaving the note, pledging allegiance to ISIS. Give me a break, you know. There's a story in the Telegraph today about Peter Ford, the former British ambassador to Syria. Now, you might remember him because he went on BBC News and Sky News to say that he didn't believe that President Assad would have carried out a chemical gas attack on his own people. The establishment didn't like that very much. Former ambassador saying, well, no, I don't believe it. So the Telegraph has written today that Mr. Ford became a director of a company called the British Syrian Society, founded by Fawaz Akras, who's the father of Asma al-Assad. Asma al-Assad is married to Bashar al-Assad. She was born, I think she was born in London, wasn't she? I think she was. Her father certainly was. He's a cardiologist. Now, he founded the British Syrian Society. The Telegraph are saying today that Peter Ford joined the British Syrian Society a few weeks ago, and because of that, he's a shill, and his comments on Sky News and on the BBC. Did you hear those comments? Let me play those comments. This is what he said on Sky News.
Ask who benefits. Clearly, it's not the Syrian regime or the Russians who are benefiting, and I believe it's highly unlikely that either were behind what's happened. There are different possibilities. One is that all of it is fake news. The images, the videos, the information all come from opposition sources and not from any credible independent journalists. It's also possible that the pictures show the aftermath of a bombing attack which happened to hit a jihadi chemical weapons munition dump. We know for a fact that the jihadis were storing chemical weapons in schools in eastern Aleppo because these were seen later by Western journalists. This is one distinct possibility.
So that's what he said. He said that to BBC News as well. The Telegraph are now saying that he's now a member of a society, or he was before he did that interview, and basically his opinions can't be trusted because he is biased and all of that. Can you imagine it? We have a Prime Minister, Theresa May, who, when Home Secretary, it was proven by a number of newspapers in this country that deals done and agreements made with companies in this country suited her husband. Her husband had a direct link to certain companies that were awarded contracts by the Department of the Home Secretary. So it suits the Telegraph to say, well, this guy Peter Ford, former ambassador, he's now a member of the British Syrian Society, can't believe him about the chemical attacks, but nothing about the former Prime Minister and some of the dodgy deals done by her government that benefited her husband. Not just May either, any other front bench minister and their family, the revolving door and all of that. I'm going to leave you with that. It's just past midday for Sunday, 23rd of April, 2017. Have yourself a fantastic St. George's Day, if you're celebrating it, that is. If you're not, well, have a good day anyway. The programme will be on Podomatic real soon. It'll be on YouTube in about 90 minutes or 2 hours' time. I'll be back with you tomorrow at 7 p.m. British Summer Time. Piers Corbyn, the brother of Jeremy Corbyn, will be among the guests tomorrow. Got a good week lined up for you. Until tomorrow, then, it's bye for now. Enjoy the rest of your Sunday. Take it easy. Bye now. Bye. Bye bye.
Broadcasting the information the mainstream media won't touch. This is the Richie Allen Show in association with DavidIke.com.